to order. It is about 1:02 p.m. on Monday, February 25th, 2019. And before we begin, I want to thank Butch Carber, the House Judiciary Secretary, for making sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind all members to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Eastman, Representative Kopp, Representative Shaw, my Vice Chair, Representative Ledoux, and myself, Representative Clayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first in order only of business today is the confirmation hearing for the Speaker's appointment to the Department of Law, and that would be Kevin Clarkson. The appointee is present. I would recognize the Representative Wool has joined us. Mr. Clarkson, if you would please come forward and you can proceed with your testimony. I would note for the folks in the room that I know we have a number of invited testimony, and we will also open for public testimony after the invited testimony.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon. I'm Kevin Clarkson, Attorney General designee, and thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon to introduce myself, tell you a little bit about myself, both personally and professionally, and to answer your questions. So like many Alaskans, I am a transplant from another state. So I came to Alaska from Oregon, where I was born and raised.
Just a brief pause. Representative Stutz has also joined us.
Certainly.
Go ahead and continue.
But I'm from Oregon, so I went to high school, college, and law school there. I'm a graduate of Oregon State University, so I'm a Beaver. And I went to Willamette Law School in my hometown of Salem, Oregon. My father was a Oregon State police officer for 27 years before he retired. So I'm the product of a law enforcement family. My plan out of law school was to interview with law firms in Portland and Seattle and get a job there and stay in the Pacific Northwest. But when I interviewed with one large national firm in Portland, Perkins Coie, they told me they'd filled their spots in Portland and Seattle. But I learned that they had an office in Anchorage, Alaska. So I'll be honest and tell you, my first reaction to that was to say, where? You know, I'd never been to Alaska before. So, but I was intrigued. So I agreed. They flew me up to Anchorage in March of 1985. And that was my first exposure to Alaska, was March 1985. It was breakup. And so I looked around. I thought, yeah, I was impressed with what I saw. I thought, I can do this for a couple years, and thought I would stay 2 years and then go back to the Pacific Northwest, and people would know who I worked for if I worked for Perkins Coie. But of course, the rest is history. I've been here 34 years now, and I love Alaska at this point. I couldn't imagine living anywhere else. I have four children, two sons and two daughters, and I have two stepsons. One, Abel Jose, by my late wife, Noru. He's in Barranquilla, Colombia, and my young stepson, Sammy, or Samuel, who is the son of my daughter, my wife, Joanna. And my children are all born and raised in Alaska, save for my stepsons, and they're all Alaskans. Although my youngest daughter, Krista, is actually living in Ohio right now, she went all the way to Ohio so she could meet and marry a young man from Kenai. And my youngest son, Joey, is living in Washington State and soon Coronado, California. But he's out of Alaska simply because he's serving our country in the United States Navy. My oldest son and daughter live in Anchorage and Kenai, respectively. Matt's an attorney. And I tried to convince him to be a doctor, but that didn't work out the way I planned. But he's now general counsel for Chugach Electric Association. Lauren is operating her own business in Kenai, and Abel Jose has his own, he's an electrical engineer in Barranquilla. So I know this will be hard for you all to believe because I look so young, but I actually have five grandchildren. And so in addition to other things, I answer to being called Granddad. And my wife, I'm married. Joanna is from Barranquilla, Colombia, and I speak Spanish. Although I always promised Noru I would learn Spanish when she was alive, but I didn't because she spoke perfect English. But I did learn one Spanish phrase that frankly, is the most important phrase any man married to a Colombian woman could possibly learn. And it was, por favor, perdóneme mi vida, yo no sé cómo poder ser tan estúpido, which translated means, please forgive me, my darling, I don't know how I could have been so stupid. It always seemed to work, and I can still remember Nora's response, which was, si, estúpido. In fact, I also learned that we means you in Spanish, because Nora would say, we need to clean the garage. And I would say, oh, we? She said, no, you. So anyway, Alaska has been very good to me. The practice of law in Alaska has been very good to me. I've been practicing 34 years, as I told you, here in Alaska. And I did the first 10 years of my career at Perkins Coie, that large national firm. But in 1995, I had the opportunity to move to Brenna Bell and Clarkson and have the pleasure of working with my colleague and friend, Robin Brenna, for 24 years. And in my career, I haven't moved very often. I've only worked in two places before I came here to the state. And I suppose, you know, some could look at that and think that that's a reflection of a lack of depth of experience. Me, I look at it and I think it reflects dedication and loyalty. And anyone who looks at me and thinks that I don't have a depth of experience, with all due respect to them, they really don't know me very well. I've heard in the last few weeks some expression of the idea that my experience is limited to controversial constitutional cases on major social issues. And in the truth, over 34 years, that work has represented only about 10% of my practice. Most of what I do, the 90%, is what other civil litigating lawyers do. So over my 34 years of practicing law, I've had tremendous opportunities to work for a wide variety of clients and types of clients, and on a wide array of cases and legal issues. Some lawyers have the luxury of doing the same thing over and over again. I've always envied those lawyers, but it's never been my experience. For me, every case brought something new. And over the years, having to learn something new every case brings stress. But I think I've grown over the years to appreciate that depth of experience that's brought to me. It's been challenging, but challenges are a good thing. So I've represented clients ranging from individuals to small businesses to Fortune 500 corporations, municipalities, boroughs, electric utilities, the Alaska legislature itself, groups of legislators. I've represented the state of Alaska in the past in front of the Alaska Supreme Court. I've represented Native corporations ranging in region within Alaska from the North Slope to the Bering Sea to Southeast Alaska, involving some major timber issues. I've represented air carriers, both large and small, in Alaska. And I've had the honor of representing the Alaska Bar Association, acting as special bar counsel to prosecute grievances against attorneys for ethical violations. And I've acted as trustee counsel on appointment by the Superior Court to wind down practices for attorneys who needed their practices to be wound down. I've participated and chaired both disciplinary and fee arbitration panels for the Bar Association. And so over my 34 years, I've represented these clients in federal and state courts throughout Alaska, from Ketchikan to Sitka to Juneau to Kenai, Kodiak, Valdez, Anchorage, Palmer, Bethel, Fairbanks, Nome, Kotzebue, Barrow. I've covered the entire state in terms of where I've appeared representing clients. I've worked on and argued close to 50 appeals, arguing about 30 cases combined to the Alaska Supreme Court and the Ninth Circuit, one case to the en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit. And with respect to legal issues, I've worked on and litigated cases involving tax issues, employment issues, contract disputes ranging from just a contract between two individuals to multi-million dollar deals between major corporate entities. I've litigated construction disputes ranging from the roof on someone's house to a $40 million dispute over a hydroelectric dam in Cordova, Alaska. I've represented clients in litigated professional liability claims against doctors, lawyers, accountants, engineers. Worked on cases and litigated cases involving business dissolution disputes ranging from corporations to limited liability companies to partnerships to joint ventures. I've worked on a litigated complex oil and gas sale contract cases involving producers like Unocal and shippers, refiners like Tesoro. And I've worked on cases involving contract disputes between oil producers and oil drillers. involving contract disputes over work performed on oil platforms in the Cook Inlet of Alaska. And I've litigated cases involving claims related to complex and elaborate criminal and fraudulent schemes, including six cases under the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, the federal RICO statute. So I'll be very honest with you, and I'll tell you that when I was first asked before the election to help create a list of who would be the Attorney General, I didn't put myself on the list. The governor came to me and talked to me after the election and spent a good amount of time sitting on my sofa. He's a pretty persuasive guy. And I was impressed mostly by his vision of what he wanted to accomplish for Alaska, how he described that to me, to promote and protect Alaska's interests and protect public safety, support and our law enforcement and our prosecutors. And I think that moved me mostly because of my dad having been an Oregon State Police officer. So after reflecting on how good Alaska's been to me and my family, I decided it was time to give something back. And so here I am today, sitting before you, asking for the honor of your confirmation to be Alaska's Attorney General. I look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clarkson. Thank you for your testimony. As I noted before, it's my intention to hear both invited testimony and public testimony once we finish our questions. And because I'd like to get to the invited and public testimony, and it's also for those that have served with me on this committee before, it will be my plan to continue to limit committee members to 1 minute per question. If it gets to a minute and you haven't posed a question, then we'll move on to the next person with a question. And this is actually a time for questions, not for comments. Is there anyone with questions for Mr. Clarkson? Representative Stoops.
Thank you. First, I'd like to ask forgiveness for being tardy, and I didn't mean to interrupt you. I have lots and lots of letters from people in opposition, but I don't seem to have any letters from people in support. Who are your supporters? Can you tell me who your supporters might be for this appointment?
I think you might hear from some of those today in live testimony. There's a number of folks who have been willing to testify. I'll let them speak for themselves, but the folks who spoke at the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, or it was actually Judiciary and State Affairs, I believe, combined. And this is, I'm answering through the chair. I apologize for forgetting that. Jeff Feldman, a very well-respected, recognized attorney. Eric Sanders, a former Superior Court judge. Mike Garrity, a former Attorney General. Robin Brenna, my longtime partner and colleague. I think John Thorsness, a longtime recognized attorney in Anchorage, called in and testified as well. Lauren Lehman called in and testified on my behalf. There may have been more, but that's what I remember. Some of those same folks, you'll hear from them today.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I don't. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. How do you see your role as Attorney General?
Well, the role of the Attorney General, as I understand it, is to be a legal advisor to the governor in his official capacity as governor of Alaska, and it is the role of the Attorney General to represent the state of Alaska and the office of the governor. So my role, I believe, is to give the governor and the various departments, the legislature perhaps from time to time, the best legal advice that I can give them based on what the law is.
Any follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. And I've heard it said, would you characterize the role of the Attorney General as the top prosecutor for the state?
In some respects, I believe that is true. I'm clearly not sitting here asking you to confirm me as being a line prosecutor. That's not what the Attorney General does. But I would be the highest official within the Department of Law with responsibility over the criminal division, yes.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Through the chair. So I'm curious then, if you were to be confirmed as Attorney General, as head of Department of Law, if it were to come to your attention that the governor, the gentleman who had appointed you, was in fact violating state law, how would you handle that situation?
Well, I guess it would be the same way I would handle that with any other client. If I was in private practice, you would come to the client, you would explain what the law requires, what the law holds, and explain how their conduct in that case was not compatible with what the law holds. And I want to answer this question by saying I have every confidence I'm not going to face that problem with Governor Dunleavy. I believe he respects the law just as much as I do and anyone else in this room. But that's how I would handle that. I would advise him what the law is. But short of that, you know, I can't put him in a headlock and stop him from doing what he wants to do. Ultimately, the delegates to our constitutional convention created an office of the governor with a very strong executive power placed in that office, and it belongs to the governor. If the governor decides to not follow my advice, perhaps if I've advised something's not constitutional and moves forward anyway, the check on the governor at that point is the judiciary. That's the other co-equal branch of government that is charged with protecting our Constitution and enforcing our laws in that respect.
Can I follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Through the chair. So as head of the Department of Law, if the governor were to persist in violating state law, would you feel that you had the competence to prosecute the governor?
Well, I would certainly hope that the governor wouldn't do something that was criminal, because that's what prosecuting would mean. But I believe that there's not a person in this state that's above the law. And again, I don't think I'm ever going to face this problem. But hypothetically, there are prosecutors in this state who would be charged with prosecuting any crime, no matter who it's committed by, whether it's a member of this committee or whether it's the governor.
Follow up?
Representative Eastman, I'll give you a couple more questions, and others are in the queue. So,
thank you. Now, that wasn't quite what I had asked. I was wondering if you would be comfortable prosecuting, or would you, in fact, feel like you had to turn that over to someone else to prosecute?
You know, that's an interesting question. obviously, there are cases in which an attorney general has to recuse himself. I've had some already, the cases I was involved in below, in courts below. Before I became AG, I had to step away and assign someone else responsibility for those cases. Whether that would be true in a criminal case simply because the governor appointed me, I don't necessarily think that's correct. I don't think that's true. I think that would be my job and my responsibility, and the simple fact that the governor appointed me wouldn't relieve me of that responsibility. But
thank you.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you once again, Mr. Chair. Clarkson, do you feel like part of the duties of the AG is to be the moral compass for the state?
No, I don't. I mean, other than, and likewise, I don't know, sure if I understand your question, but through the chair, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting. I apologize.
Clarkson, you're sorry. We don't.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
I'm hard on my limits to the questions, but I give the witness some flexibility.
Thank you very much. To the extent that the law represents a moral decision about what conduct should be, then sure, because that would be my job as Attorney General, would be to enforce the law of Alaska. But to enforce some other moral compass, no.
Thank you.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Clarkson. I'm probably one of the few people here that's also been to Barranquilla, Colombia.
Oh, okay. Very good.
So you listed a bunch of types of cases you worked on earlier, oil and utilities and RICO cases, and you said a small percentage of your work has been on social issues, divisive issues. And I know if Neil Armstrong had a long and illustrious career, but if he walked in the room, we'd ask him about his moon landing, which is a small percentage of what he's done probably. So I'm going to ask you, can you tell us a little bit about those cases?
The cases?
The 20%.
In the 10% range?
10% with the 3%, okay. Whatever the percentage.
Well, sure. Primarily, it's been a series of two cases that spanned over probably 10 years, and so these cases weren't resolved quickly. The Alaska legislature in 1996 passed a parental consent law. So to back up historically, in 1997, the Alaska Supreme Court issued a decision in the Valley Hospital case, which says that a right to privacy in Alaska protects a right to abortion. But after that decision was made, there's just all kinds of nuances about what's permissible and what's not permissible in terms of the state regulating abortion. And so in 1996, the Alaska legislature passed a parental consent law. And that law wasn't just passed by the legislature. It was passed overwhelmingly by the legislature. They actually had to override a veto from Governor Knowles to put that law in place. And so that law required that before a young girl who was 16 years or younger could obtain an abortion, she had to have either one parent's consent or the approval of a judge through a bypass proceeding, which meant she'd have to appear in front of a judge and either prove that she was mature enough to make her own decision or that her parents weren't fit to participate in that decision for various reasons. So that law was challenged by folks who were opposed to that law. And I'll say this, that law didn't put Alaska out in some fringe. 80% of the states in this country have parental involvement laws, so 40 out of 50. And so it put Alaska pretty much in mainstream. But nonetheless, we have a constitution that is applied independently by our court. And so a challenge was filed. That case went to the trial court. The trial court ruled that the law was unconstitutional. I was hired by the Alaska legislature to step in beside the lawyers in the Department of Law to help defend the statute. And so I did that. And the case went to the trial court. The trial court struck the law down, went to the Supreme Court. I was invited to argue along with the state assistant AG. And the Supreme Court split 3-2. Two of the justices, Justice Matthews and Carpinetti, would have upheld the law as a matter of law right then and there. But the three other justices wanted the case returned to the trial court for a trial so that the court could receive evidence about what the state's compelling interest might be, which was necessary to uphold that law, and how that law might be implemented in the least restrictive means possible. So the case went back down. There was a trial. The trial court again struck the law down. And at that point, I was hired by the state of Alaska to represent the state in the appeal to the Alaska Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court again split 3-2 and struck the law down. And then actually on rehearing, the court split 2-2 because Justice Brenner had retired. And because there's a tie in the appellate court, the lower court is affirmed. And so the law was struck down. So that was the first case that I worked on, hired by the legislature and then by the state of Alaska. The second case was the parental notice case. Now, that case came about because in the parental consent decision, the Alaska Supreme Court struck down the parental consent law because it found that there was a less restrictive but equally effective alternative available to the state, which was a parental notice law as opposed to a parental consent law. The court was concerned that a consent law placed a veto in the path of a young girl wanting to obtain an abortion. All right, so the court in the parental consent decision literally stated, and this is almost a quote, I can't claim it's an exact quote, but it's close, our Constitution will permit a statutory scheme which ensures that parents are notified so that they can be involved in their young daughter's decisions regarding pregnancy and abortion. So that encouraged folks to go out and create a law. The legislature tried for two sessions to create a parental notice law. They didn't accomplish it. And then a group of people got together and formed an initiative and took it to the people, and the people passed it by, I think, 59%. That law was then, challenged as well. And I was hired by the sponsors of the initiative to step aside beside the attorneys in the Department of Law once again to help defend the parental notice law. That case went through the trial court, and the trial court actually upheld the law. And then it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court struck it down. So that's my involvement in those cases. And the law that exists in Alaska now was developed in those cases that I worked on. It didn't exist before I worked on those cases. It exists now because of those cases. So.
Follow up.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What about issues of same-sex marriage? Was that something you've been involved with also?
I was hired by the Alaska legislature in 1998. The legislature had passed a marriage amendment. It's Article 1, Section 25 of our Constitution. And there was a challenge brought to try to stop that amendment from appearing on the ballot so that the people could vote on it. I was hired by the legislature to help defend that amendment and keep it on the ballot. So I did that. We were successful. It stayed on the ballot. The people of Alaska passed that amendment by about 69% favorable vote. But at this point in time, the United States Supreme Court has ruled. And I'll say this, Alaska, I think although ours was the first marriage amendment that was passed, it was passed the same day as Hawaii's. Hawaii passed one as well. And eventually 31 states passed and ratified marriage amendments. But now, today, the United States Supreme Court has ruled in the Obergefell decision that there's a constitutional right to marry someone of the same sex. And so that makes our marriage amendment at this point in time moot. That's the law.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The city of Fairbanks, I think today, is going to hear an ordinance city ordinance about equality, non-discrimination based on gender, sexual identity. If the state legislature were to pass a law like that, would you support it?
Well, it really wouldn't matter whether I support it or not. If the legislature passed it, it would be my job to enforce it. That would be the job of the Attorney General, to uphold it and enforce it, yes.
Thank you. One last question.
Okay, if Representative, I may. Go ahead.
Quickly, and I'll be done. Did you serve on the grant committee for the Alliance Defending Freedom, and if so, what years?
Wow, that was about 14 years. I can't tell you the exact window, but I think I left their grant review committee in about, I want to say 2017, so you can do the math and put that together, probably from 2003 to 2017. And the ADF is a public interest nonprofit law firm that represents individuals in constitutional cases involving rights to free exercise of religion, rights of conscience, protecting persons' rights to free speech, and also on right to life issues from time to time. They raise money and provide grants to lawyers. So I served on the grant review committee for ADF for 14 years, which meant every case that came through ADF looking for a grant to support the work of the attorneys working on that case. I can't claim I was 100% attendance, perfect, attendance, but I was there at most meetings and would have reviewed those cases and voted on whether to fund the work that the lawyers were going to be doing. Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux. Sometimes you have to elbow me when you're sitting next to me because my peripheral vision is sometimes.
I'll remember to elbow you. So how would you handle a situation where you personally agreed with, let's say, a restrictive abortion law or a restrictive LGBT law? Philosophically, but you thought that if the legislature passed such a law, it would be unconstitutional. So from the beginning of the bill until the constitutional challenge, how would you see your role and what would you say?
I guess I don't see my role as being one that would engage in the political debate of whether something like that, whatever that might be, should become law. I think my role would be, if it becomes law, whatever that law might be, unless it's just black letter, clear as day, unconstitutional. I mean, it would have to be that clear. I think that's the standard I have to abide by. My job would be to defend that law, whatever it might be. And then it's up to the judiciary to make a decision about whether the law is truly constitutional or not.
Thank you.
But I think before I would actually, and just to clarify, before I would act to say I'm not going to defend this law or this action of the governor, it would literally have to be just as clear as day that it's unconstitutional. I'm not going to be refusing to defend laws in areas where it's questionable. An attorney's job is to represent their client zealously within the bounds of the law. And so that's the question, what is the bounds of the law? And as long as there's a reasonable argument to be made on behalf of a client, in the case that you described, it would be the state of Alaska as the client defending the law. As long as there's a reasonable basis to do so, that would be my job to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Clarkson, for being willing to serve as the Attorney General for the state of Alaska. Would it be fair to say that much of your representation on the cases you cited earlier that have been about 10% of your practice has been by invitation of the state of Alaska to participate?
In terms of the sort of abortion-related cases, absolutely, that's true. It's either been the legislature or the state of Alaska. Although in the parental notice case, I was representing the sponsors of the initiative, but we participated as co-counsel with the AG's office, so it was clearly cooperative and at their invitation in that respect, yes.
Follow up, Representative Kopp.
In reviewing your, thank you for that. In reviewing your cited cases, it appears you have extensive experience representing Alaska Native Village corporations. Is that correct?
Yeah, I guess there were about 6 or 7 years of my career where that's what I was doing, yes.
Okay, there's a full page and a half of
yeah.
what attracted you to that area of law?
Well, the it was the area of law where I was involved and engaged in initially were those professional liability cases that I was working on. There were Native corporations that I was representing who had been significantly wronged by legal professionals, attorneys, who were representing them and had committed significant malpractice and or breaches of fiduciary duty in the course of representing those Native corporations and had harmed those Native corporations. So I was asked by those corporations to represent their interests and to pursue those claims for them, which I did successfully. Later, it became representing the interests of some village corporations, actually in one case against a regional corporation, trying to protect that village corporation's interest in its timber interests. And there were two cases that involved significant timber interests in Southeast Alaska. So I guess what drew me to it was just that's what I do. I'm a litigator, and these are civil cases that I found interesting and intriguing. These were clients that needed representation, and they deserved representation because they'd, at least, as their advocate, my view was they'd been wronged. And we managed to settle most of those cases. In one case, I tried to a jury, and we've succeeded. That was the legal malpractice case.
Okay. Chairman, follow-up, Representative Kopp.
So education is a big topic in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
There's many of us that want to advance Alaska beyond our current tier of ranking among states for educational outcomes. One of the paths forward that could transform education is through state tribal compacting. In other words, the state entering into an agreement with tribes in a different way than it ever has before to allow more local control of how a curriculum, how an education is delivered to a child. Do you see anything within the Department of Law or your personal position that would prevent a path forward for state tribal compacting of education?
No, off the top of my head, no. I guess I would have to reserve some judgments. I could study something like that a little more thoroughly, but not off the top of my head, no. I think compacting is used in a number of areas. We use it in the criminal area, for example, by signing civil diversion agreements with the tribe so that they can actually enforce some of the lower-level misdemeanor-type criminal activity out in the villages. It makes a lot of sense to have those kinds of things handled by the local communities. The only thing I was thinking of, I was trying to think in my mind whether or not there would be an impediment to providing funding, but I don't think so, because I think the only impediment in the Constitution would be providing money to a religious organization directly, which those tribal entities would not be. So I can't think of an impediment.
Representative Kopp, follow up.
Thank you for,
sure.
for the answer. Yeah, I can't think of anything that would be impediment either. Federally, there are some things we need to address to improve that, but on a state basis, no. A previous question that you entertained was whether or not you would be willing to prosecute the executive branch. From your familiarity with the Alaska Constitution and legislative procedure, are you aware that it's the legislature's duty to impeach a governor if there's a transgression of law?
Well, sure, if there's an impeachment, that would be clearly the legislature's role. Wouldn't be my role. But I understood the prior question to be the governor actually committing a crime and being a criminal prosecution. But as far as staying in office, yeah, impeachment is a role of the legislature.
Yes, so through the chair. But my point is that a crime can result in impeachment of the legislative branch. And it would not preclude you from taking action after that occurred. But the legislature does play a role, and I just wanted to make sure you were aware of that.
No, I am aware of that. Through the chair, I am aware of that, yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Clarkson. That's all I have for now. Thank you, sir.
Anyone else? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through the chair. Now, as the state is party to cases going forward, if you're confirmed as Attorney General, and you are before the Alaska Supreme Court, and the court does not see it your way, and you believe that you know they are in error, would you feel comfortable appealing that decision to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, if in the course of the Supreme Court making its decision, it has made an error in federal constitutional law, and I believe that in my professional opinion, absolutely, I would be comfortable taking those issues to the United States Supreme Court. Of course, you don't have a right to take it to them as a matter of course. You have to ask them by cert petition to accept the case. But I would have no qualms in doing that. None whatsoever.
Follow up.
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. And if it was an issue where it dealt more with our state constitution and you didn't have that as an avenue to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, how would you advise the governor to act in that situation where you believe that the state Supreme Court had gotten the matter of law incorrect?
Well, through the chair.
Just as a matter of clarity, you might clarify in your answer whether the Alaska Supreme Court ever gets anything wrong.
That's you're very intuitive because that's exactly where I was going. I was going to say, and I don't say this facetiously, but the court, in a technical sense, is always right because they get the last word, at least when it comes to Alaska law. There are lots of things that can be done if folks think the Alaska Supreme Court has made an error in the way it's interpreted the Alaska Constitution. We have Article 13 allows people to amend the Constitution. But I have to say, I can't imagine myself advising the governor or any department or even a member of this legislature to simply ignore the Alaska Supreme Court when it's ruled on an issue of Alaska law, because it is the third branch of government that is deserving of that respect.
Thank you.
I don't see anybody else, and I usually my pattern is to wait until everyone else is done before asking the questions that I have. Because some of them were actually asked. One query I had in terms of your representing Native corporations, was that mostly on the defense side or the plaintiff side? Because it sounded like you had malpractice cases, and I wasn't clear whether you were – which side of that equation you were on.
You know, I would have to – Chairman, I would say every case in which I represent a Native corporation, with the exception of one, has been plaintiffing on their behalf. It was either suing – Native corporations or some other business or regional corporation over a timber ownership dispute. There was one case in Kaktovik. I represented Kaktovik Inupiat Corporation way back in the early 1990s, mm-hmm. where it was a tax dispute. So I was defending them from a claim by the state of Alaska in that case.
And in those malpractice cases, you were representing the plaintiff and not the defense on the malpractice cases?
Right. And in those cases, the Native Corporation was the plaintiff, yes.
Right. Okay. I understand from one of the letters that we received there's been a lawsuit with the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission that you've been involved with. What's the status of that case today? Is that still going on? Are you still involved with the case?
Oh, okay. Mr. Chairman, no, I'm no longer involved with the case. I represented Downtown Hope Center, and the Hope Center is a homeless shelter for abused women off the streets of Anchorage, homeless women. And they had an individual who showed up at their shelter one evening because the individual had gone to the Brother Francis shelter, which is the Catholic homeless shelter in town, and had gotten into a fight and had been thrown out of the Brother Francis shelter. The police came, picked up the individual, and then took them to the Hope Center. And the Hope Center Executive Director, Sherry Laurie, came out, saw the person, saw that they were inebriated under the influence of alcohol, and had a wound over their eye. And so what she did was she said, well, we can't admit you because you're under the influence of alcohol. We have our policies. We don't admit people under the influence and of drugs or alcohol. And you have a wound over your eye. So she reached into her pocket, took out cab fare, and gave it to the individual and said, you need to go to the hospital. Sent him off in a taxi to Providence Hospital. So the claim that had been filed against Hope Center with the Anchorage Equal Rights Commission was a charge by this individual claiming they had been discriminated against on the basis of gender identity. From a factual standpoint, it just simply wasn't true. They'd been turned away because they were drunk, and they were actually sent to the hospital to get their wound treated with money that the Hope Center had given to the individual to pay for the taxi. The individual returned the next day, but again was turned away not because of their gender identity, but because they showed up at the wrong time. The Hope Center only opens their doors for individuals to come in 5:45 in the afternoon. The person showed up at 2 o'clock, and so it was just the wrong time of day to be admitted. And so as an attorney, I was hired to defend Hope Center from the charge that they discriminated on the basis of gender identity. And so I drafted an answer. We filed the answer on their behalf, explaining that there, from a factual standpoint, there was actually no discrimination. And then from a legal standpoint, we argued the law didn't apply to Hope Center anyway in the first place, because the law only applies to public accommodations. And there was a decision from the Alaska State Human Rights Commission under the State Human Rights Act, which also has a public accommodations requirement to it, defining what a public accommodation was. And they ruled that the Friendship Mission in Kenai was not a public accommodation because it was a charitable homeless shelter that had was not open to the public generally. And that's actually a very detailed decision. They went through all the law across the country explaining what it takes to be a public accommodation and concluded that the Friendship Mission in Kenai was not a public accommodation because they weren't open to the general public and they were charitable. So we argued on behalf of Hope Center that they were also not a public accommodation under the Anchorage Ordinance. That's pretty much where my involvement ended, although somewhere in there, there was an initiative drive going on in Anchorage at the time over that very issue, the ordinance, I mean. And somewhere in there, I got a phone call from a reporter asking me about that case. And so I sent a copy of the answer we had filed with the commission to the reporter. And then, lo and behold, the AERC decided to file a charge of discrimination against my law firm, not against me personally, but my law firm, claiming somehow we had spoken discrimination. I don't know what that means. I mean, that's what lawyers do. They speak on behalf of their clients, particularly when you're filing an answer on their behalf, claiming that there's been no discrimination. There was a significant amount of outcry in Anchorage over the fact that they filed that claim against my law firm. And they dropped that claim fairly quickly, and so that's been dismissed. The status of the Downtown Hope Center case, I think that the Hope Center went to federal court and filed a complaint there claiming constitutional rights of free exercise, conscience, and whatnot, and that case is still pending in front of the federal court. I believe it's in front of Judge Gleason. Motions have been filed. There's been no rulings, but I'm no longer involved in that case.
Can I take it, is the state a party to that case at all?
No, not at all.
And would it be reasonable to conclude if somehow the state became involved that you as Attorney General would recuse yourself from being involved because of your prior work on the case?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The other follow-up question to the question Representative Ledoux was asking about kind of what would you advise? A little bit different. You've got an issue where there are constitutional questions, and you're actually called to a committee such as this one to give the Attorney General's opinion about the constitutionality of a particular proposal. It's not quite black and white. It's not absolute, but it's for lack of a better description, kind of stretching the limits of precedent. How would you then advise a committee like this where you're seeing a proposal that is, use my words, kind of stretching about as far as you could? How would you then provide?
I take my integrity very seriously. I take my honesty very seriously. So I would hope if I'm in that situation, what I would do is I'd be very candid with you and tell you exactly what the law is. If it's gray, I'd tell you it's gray. If it's tilted this way or tilted that way, I would tell you, I'd shoot straight and tell you what it is, I guess is what I'm saying.
Okay. Any of that call on any other follow-up questions? I don't see any, so that gets you off the hook.
Okay, thank you.
And we're going to move on to invited testimony. The first person we would ask for invited testimony is Robin Brenna. Mr. Brenna, are you on the line? Can you hear us?
Yes, Chairman.
So with invited testimony, I would encourage you to try to keep your comments to about 3 minutes. I'm not going to rigidly enforce that timeline, but go ahead.
Well, good afternoon. My name is Robin Brenna. I'm the owner of Brenna Belling Clarkson, and I've been the owner of that law firm since 1988. We hired Kevin, and he's worked with us before his appointment to be the Attorney General for 23 and a half years. I know Kevin personally. I know him professionally. I've been involved and tracked virtually every case he's ever handled for the firm. I have tremendous respect for him as a person and as an attorney. As a person, he's a fine father and member of the community and his church and husband. Andy's been a good person to work with, a good person to try cases with. Professionally, he is an excellent attorney. He has Martindale and Hubbell's highest rankings as an attorney, and the attorneys that know Kevin and work with him think very highly of his work, and I'm sure you'll probably hear from some of them in the course of the day. I think Kevin is a conservative person, more conservative than I. We've had different kinds of conversations for decades. I would like to make clear that those conversations were always respectful, and he appreciated other points of view. I think that an important thing to know about Kevin is his respect for the law. Once it's resolved, he's an attorney that has immense respect for the law and will follow the law once it's determined. He is also an excellent constitutional attorney. In fact, I think he's the best constitutional attorney in the state of Alaska. And to the degree that constitutional issues come into play, he'd be an excellent person to have at the helm of that. He's also dedicated himself to improving the practice of law in Alaska through volunteering time for the Alaska Bar Association. Last year, he won an award for his volunteerism, and he has often taken legal ethics and conflict cases that the Alaska Bar Association is not able to prosecute, and he has been their sort of go-to attorney for those types of cases that they cannot prosecute in-house. So I would strongly recommend the committee vote for him. He's highly qualified for the position that he's been nominated for, and I think he's going to do an excellent job.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brenna. Is there anyone on the committee that has questions for Mr. Brenna? Mr. Brenna, I don't see any. Thank you very much for calling in today. Next in invited testimony is Clark Nichols. Mr. Nichols, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. Chairman, this is Clark Nichols. I'm Parker Perkins Cooley. I'm testifying today from our Bellevue office. I worked with Kevin for approximately 10 years. I was resident in the Anchorage office from 1979 to 1992. I've been a member of the Alaska Bar Association for 40 years this year. I really hold Kevin's legal skills in the highest regard. I enjoyed practicing with him, not only for his legal skills, but also because he was such a genuinely courteous and advocate. But I've been listening to the testimony so far today, and I wanted to expound upon something that came to mind as you were talking. And that is, Kevin represented Sea Lion Corporation, which is a Alaska Native village corporation at Hooper Bay. He referred to the malpractice case, which involved Ronald Cummings, who breached his fiduciary duties and essentially defrauded the Native corporation out at Hooper Bay. The case is, that I'm thinking of, is reported in by the Alaska Supreme Court. It's Cummings versus Sea Lion Corporation. It really explains how Kevin represented the village corporation in obtaining some justice and a judgment of the will for $800,000 back in the 97's real money in favor of the Village Corporation against Mr. Cummings. But Mr. Cummings, he decided that he didn't want to pay that $800,000, so he moved to Arizona, fraudulently transferred his assets to his girlfriend, and filed bankruptcy thinking he could prevent the Sea Lion Corporation from recovering the money because he was going to get a discharge in bankruptcy. Well, Kevin wasn't going to stand for that. He went down to Arizona, had the Arizona Bankruptcy Court transfer the case back to Anchorage, and Judge Russell Holland entered judgment for the $800,000 and denied the discharge on the basis of fraud, fraudulent conveyance. It went to the Ninth Circuit and was affirmed by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I reference that case because it demonstrates many things in terms of Kevin's, not only his outstanding legal ability, but Kevin took that case for Sea Lion when I don't think anyone else would have. When he started that case, it was not one that had a high probability of success. It was Kevin's legal skills and his perseverance that resulted in the justice for that native corporation and for the Yupik Eskimos that live at Cooper Bay. I really hold him in the highest regard. I appreciate the opportunity to testify today in support of Kevin's confirmation as Attorney General. He really is a remarkable attorney. You may or may not know Perkins Coie. We're a large nation.
We don't need to hear an explanation of Perkins Coie. You're about 4 minutes. I'll give you a little bit more to wind up, but I think you've given us a pretty good idea of your experience with Mr. Clarkson.
I appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of Kevin, and I think he will be a great Attorney General for Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Nichols? Hearing and seeing none. Next, we've got Eric Sanders. Mr. Sanders, are you on the line?
Hi, this is Eric Sanders. How are you?
You can go ahead, Mr. Sanders.
All right. So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to testify today. I'm an attorney. I've been practicing law in Alaska for 43 years. I'm a former Anchorage District Court judge as well as a now practicing lawyer. I had extensive experience with Kevin Clarkson as a lawyer who has litigated cases against him, with him. I have mediated cases as a mediator that he's been involved in as representing one of the parties. I have served as an arbitrator in hearings where he has been a participant. He has appeared in front of me when I was a judge on numerous occasions, so my experience with him is extensive. I don't really know what Kevin's political views are.
Mr. Sanders, are you on a speakerphone or a regular phone? Eric?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, but the sound is kind of garbled. I'm wondering, are you on a speakerphone or a regular phone?
Is that better?
Why don't you give it a try and we'll see.
Okay. I have extensive experience with him through all those matters, and I feel qualified based on my experience in this, to offer an opinion. I'm sure that we're probably coming from things politically differently. I'm a Democrat, and I don't know, but I assume Kevin's a Republican. Frankly, in all the dealings I've ever had with him, this has never been an issue with us because whatever his
personal views are, what his political views are. I have never entered into anything he's ever done. I have always found him to be extremely well prepared, very thorough, very hardworking, very honest. As I testified before the Senate, Kevin, I think, has very high regard for the law. He does not let his personal views intrude into his work as a lawyer. And he also has tremendous respect for people. And I say that based on watching him in a number of different settings and the way he handles things and handles people. He's extremely polite, extremely courteous, listens to what other people think. He's probably about the least dogmatic or argumentative person I've ever dealt with. He is soft-spoken, thoughtful. I'm sure that's come across in terms of how he's presented himself to you, and that is what you're seeing is really who he is. I think he's a very honorable person. I couldn't give him a higher recommendation for the position of Attorney General. I think he'll do a wonderful job for the state, and any issues that have been raised about his own political views, I think it's irrelevant because in my dealings with him, those have never been an issue in anything he's done as a lawyer. So I'm happy to answer any questions you may have, but again, I feel strongly he'll be an excellent Attorney General.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. I don't see any questions. Thank you very much. Next, we've got Jeff Feldman. Mr. Feldman.
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeff Feldman. I've been a lawyer practicing in Alaska for more than 40 years, and I'm currently teaching law at the University of Washington currently. I have litigated a great number of cases with Mr. Clarkson. They all have been what are described sometimes as high-profile cases involving issues of public policy. These are cases involving issues of reproductive freedom, reapportionment, election disputes, ballot initiatives. I'm not sure about this, but I suspect that I may have been Mr. Clarkson's most frequent adversary on these kinds of cases. And while he and I disagree on all of these issues, I have always found him to be a very talented and careful lawyer. I have found him to be committed to the rule of law, diligent and dedicated as a professional. As others have commented, to my knowledge, he always treats lawyers, litigants, and judges with courtesy and respect. And he has always, to my knowledge, acted with strict adherence to professional standards and ethics. Now, I understand why some individuals may have concerns about his appointment. Some of those individuals, in fact, are my former clients. Mr. Clarkson has frequently aligned himself with one side of these typically political or social cause issues. But I believe it's a mistake to judge lawyers by the clients they represent or the positions they have argued on clients' behalf. I believe that the test for confirmation of an attorney general should be addressed by answering three questions. And those questions, I believe, are, will the nominee zealously represent the interests of the people of Alaska? The second question, I believe, should be, does he or she have the requisite intelligence, skills, and professional judgment and ethical compass to hold this position? And the third issue, I think, should be, will the nominee lead and provide sound guidance and direction to the more than 200 lawyers who work in the Department of Law? And based on my more than 30 years of experience with Mr. Clarkson as an advocate and as an adversary, I strongly believe that he would answer, or you would answer, all three of those questions appropriately in the affirmative. I do believe he is well qualified for this position, and I strongly encourage you to approve his nomination.
Thank you very much, Mr. Feldman. I don't see any questions. Next on the list, we've got Lauren Lehman. Mr. Lehman.
Chairman Clayman and members of the committee, I'm Lauren Lehman, a lifelong Alaskan. I was raised in Inilchik, but I've been a 43-year resident and former legislator from West Anchorage, and I also served as lieutenant governor. and I consider several of you on the committee as close personal friends, and I'd like to get to know the rest of you better, and I hope I have that opportunity. I support the confirmation of Kevin Clarkson as Attorney General. I believe Governor Dunleavy made an excellent choice when he chose, when he pursued Kevin, and I'm grateful Kevin agreed to take a recess from his legal practice to serve the state of Alaska. I've known Kevin Clarkson for about 30 years, and during the past 24 years, he served as legal counsel and advisor, supporting and representing the legislature and state of Alaska, as he discussed earlier, on challenges to the defense of marriage and the parental consent legislation, and for two other sponsors and myself of a ballot initiative on parental involvement. These were challenging cases, yet they dealt with some of the most important issues we faced during my 18 years in elected office and afterward. Kevin's counsel was wise and invaluable. And I've been indirectly involved and aware of some of his other legal work as well. Kevin Clarkson is fair, thorough, thoughtful, and smart. He's a respecter of our constitutions and the law, and Kevin conducts himself with integrity and dignity, and perhaps an unusual accolade for such an accomplished person, he is humble, and you've probably seen that today. I'm pleased that Kevin's talents and his demeanor are recognized by well-respected members of Alaska's legal community, including Judge Sanders, Attorney Jeff Feldman, Attorney Robin Brenna, and we've formerly heard from Attorney General Mike Garrity, and then just yesterday evening, if I can say this, in a private conversation, my friend and West Anchorage neighbor Russ Winter, another highly accomplished attorney, added his name to the list of Kevin Clarkson admirers. I encourage you to confirm Kevin Clarkson and even go beyond the usual committee reporting language by recommending to your colleagues, do confirm for this outstanding choice as Alaska's Attorney General.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next is John Thorsness.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I appreciate this opportunity to speak on behalf of Mr. Clarkson's nomination as Attorney General. I've known Mr. Clarkson personally and professionally for many years. I've been a lawyer here in Alaska for over 35 years. And what I'd like to emphasize is I've had cases where I was aligned with Mr. Clarkson and where I was opposed to him. And when you're opposed to a lawyer in a high-stakes piece of litigation, you fairly quickly see what kind of man they are, what kind of lawyer they are. And in every respect, Kevin has proven himself absolutely honest, always prepared, and highly professional. I'm very proud to be a lawyer, and in all of my dealings with Mr. Clarkson, he's made me proud to be a lawyer because he is such an exemplary person and professional. With that, I'll wrap it up. I hope he's a superb Attorney General. And I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next up would be Michael Garrity.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mike Garrity. I'm an attorney in Anchorage, Alaska, and I've practiced law in the state for over 40 years, from 2012 to 2014. It was my privilege to serve as Attorney General for the state of Alaska. I commend the governor for his appointment of Kevin Clarkson to the AG position. My relationship with Kevin goes back a number of years, and if memory serves, we're usually on opposite sides of a case. Nonetheless, our relationship was always professional and without malice. Besides being an excellent attorney, Kevin is a straight shooter. Now, that may be an archaic term, but it is among the highest compliments I can pay to one of my colleagues at the bar. I reserve it for people like Kevin, who are direct, honest, and without artifice or pretense. Kevin brings a great deal of experience to a job that I think requires a great deal of experience, and I have every confidence in his ability to excel at the position. I believe he respects the Department of Law, and I believe he will earn the respect of the department because of his professionalism and a style which is low-key and straightforward. I know Kevin has strong personal convictions and personal beliefs which he has pursued over the years, and I respect that. Many of us have convictions, but few of us invest the time and effort to actively support those convictions when the occasion arises, and I include myself within that category. For that reason, I've always admired Kevin for taking the time to defend those principles and beliefs which he holds dearly. I believe that is a virtue, not a vice, and I say that knowing that Kevin and I do not necessarily share the same personal convictions and beliefs. However, when he takes the oath of office, I have every confidence that he will put those personal convictions aside and do his utmost to uphold the laws of the state and our Constitution, because that is the oath he will take, and he will take it very seriously. I believe he has earned the support of many people across the political spectrum for just that reason. He has a well-deserved reputation as a straight shooter, and I believe those qualities will serve him very well as Attorney General. I endorse his candidacy in the strongest terms and without qualification. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. That's the last person that is here as invited testimony, which means we'll now open up for public testimony. I would note if you're on the phone, please don't use a speakerphone. It's much harder for us to understand you. I'm going to start though. Looks like we have four people in the Anchorage LIO that are still waiting to testify. We'll start with Corinne Warner. Ms. Warner, can you hear us? And I would note that for public testimony, we're going to limit the testimony to approximately 2 minutes. Ms. Warner?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead. State your name first and then proceed.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Karen Warner. I'm a constituent of Representative Johnston in District 28, and I'm here to testify as a citizen. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I am strongly opposed to Mr. Clarkson for Alaska Attorney General. Mr. Clarkson testified that only 10% of his cases were on controversial social issues, and in my opinion, that's 10% too much. Alaskans deserve an Attorney General who upholds the constitutionally protected rights of all, including reproductive and sexual health access and education, as well as equal rights for our LGBTQ Alaskans. I am a doctorally prepared registered nurse, so am not in the legal community, so not to be able to judge Mr. Clarkson. However, there has been testimony by Mr. Clarkson and other attorneys about his confirmation. However, I would encourage the committee to look at the candidate's application to the Alaska Supreme Court to replace Justice Dana Fabe. And out of eight candidates, according to the Alaska Judicial Council, his overall rating was a 2.7, which when I look at it, that is between deficient, which is a 2, and acceptable, which is 3. And I believe Alaskans deserve more than somebody who is bordering on acceptable. Again, I would encourage the committee to look carefully, and I appreciate the opportunity to provide comments.
Ms. Warner, Representative Ledoux has a question for you. Representative Ledoux.
Yes, Ms. Warner. I was just wondering on those cases that Mr. Clarkson represented the side that you did not agree with. Do you think that anybody should have represented that side?
Yes, I do. That is part of the beauty of our court system, is the fair and effective testimony for both sides.
So I guess I'm a little bit confused. If you think that it's okay for somebody to have represented them, Why are you concerned that Mr. Clarkson represented them?
Just, I guess, because of his history in terms of those cases. A little bit to the side, I am speaking as a public citizen. However, my last employment was as a sexual assault nurse examiner. And so I hold education and sexual health and relationships and the importance of teaching that to our kids very strongly. And that was, I guess, a big part of the driver of my comment, is his participation with not having qualified educators go into the schools to address sexual health, reproduction, and healthy relationships.
Thank you very much. I see no other questions. Next from the Anchorage LAO, Bessie Odom. And Ms. Warner, thank you for testifying. Ms. Odom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Bessie Odom. I live in District 28, and I'm here to speak in opposition of Kevin Clarkson. The job of an attorney general is a hard one that requires the utmost integrity towards all Alaskans. And reading up on Mr. Clarkson, there is an extensive record project that illustrates exactly where Mr. Clarkson stands on various issues. In my humble opinion, it is less than acceptable to have an appointee whose work has been largely discriminatory and divisive. For years on end, we have seen discrimination and hate directed towards our brothers and sisters within the LGBTQ plus community. Here recently, it seems we have seen an uptick in those practices throughout our nation. We Alaskans should be doing all that we can to uplift our LGBTQ plus community and protect and uphold their rights as citizens to both this country and this great state. By allowing Kevin Clarkson to be confirmed, we are allowing the rights of our LGBTQ plus community to potentially be jeopardized. Bottom line is that LGBTQ plus rights are human rights, and we cannot allow for their rights, or any other Alaskans for that matter, to become jeopardized. We are doing an Alaskans a huge injustice with an appointment so controversial in history. We Alaskans are demanding fair representation without regard to our sexuality, our gender, or what procedures we decide to endure behind closed doors in the doctor's office. We are demanding an attorney general who is fair, just, and not driven by religious ideologies that have and will continue to drive their decisions. I'm asking you all to please consider the appointment of Kevin Clarkson and the potential impacts that his appointment may have on women, LGBTQ plus individuals, and youth. I'm asking the committee to vote no on Kevin Clarkson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Xenia Peterson from the Anchorage LIO.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jenna Peterson. I live in House District 17, and I'm representing myself. Today, I testify against Attorney General nominee Kevin Clarkson. Mr. Clarkson has consistently shown a disregard for the reproductive health and constitutional rights of Alaskans during his legal career and has attacked LGBTQ plus rights in Alaska. An attorney general has a clear role of protecting Alaskans' interests and constitutional rights. It is other than Mr. Clarkson's history that he is not qualified to work as an attorney general for the state of Alaska. Even if the Alaskan Supreme Court has rejected his appointment because they felt his views were too religiously biased. In the past, Mr. Clarkson has used religious liberty as a means of denying Alaskans the right to health care.
Ms. Peterson. The sound, for reasons, I don't think anything you can do because you're in the LIO, but it's a little bit garbled. Could you slow down just a little bit because you're talking so fast it's making it even harder for the technology to keep up?
To the chair, yes.
Thank you. Go ahead and continue.
In the past, Mr. Clarkson has used religious liberty as means of denying Alaskans reproductive health care and restricting students' access to sex education. And as a young woman, this worries me. My rights to reproductive health care is essential to my livelihood, and all students in Alaska should have access to comprehensive, medically accurate, and inclusive sex education. I additionally questioning where Mr. Clarkson views on the LGBTQ plus rights and denying transgender women access to services. He has supported an amendment to the Alaska Constitution to ban the same-sex marriage. This is now looking out for the best interests of all Alaskans. I would like to thank the House Judiciary Committee for letting me testify and encourage all of you to reject the nomination of Kellen Clarkson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last person I've got from the Anchorage LIO is Robin Smith. Ms. Smith.
Hello, my name is Robin Smith, and I live here in Anchorage. I oppose the nomination of Kevin Clarkson for Attorney General of Alaska. We need a moderate attorney in this position. Kevin Clarkson has religious views that put him outside the norm of the standard Alaskan and puts him at odds with the Alaskan Constitution. Clarkson has every right to his beliefs, but I am deeply concerned about how his personal beliefs would impact Alaskans who he represents. Clarkson has been hostile to equal rights for the LGBTQIA community. He has worked to change the non-discrimination law in Anchorage and also opposed same-sex marriage in Alaska. Clarkson has also worked to deny Muslims and Jews to be able to participate in invocations at the Kenai Borough meeting. Additionally, Alaska has one of the highest rates of sexually transmitted infections, rape, and sexual assault in the United States. One way to reduce STIs and prevent sexual assault and rape is to offer teens comprehensive sex education that includes subjects like consent and respect. Clarkson has worked to restrict access to sexual education. Women have the right to legal abortion in our state. Clarkson is pro-life and has actively worked to restrict abortion in trans lawsuits. I've been witness to them over the years, many years, and he almost always is the attorney that has represented the state of Alaska. The appearance of Clarkson as Attorney General is simply wrong. The AG holds tremendous power in the Department of Law. Would a Muslim, trans person, or woman seeking an abortion trust that person would uphold their rights as forcefully or with as much financial...
Ms. Smith, you're at about a little over the two-minute time, so if you could conclude your remarks, that would be great.
Excuse me. God, I lost my phrase. Anyway, would one of those people trust that Clarkson would uphold their rights as forcefully or use as much financial resources as he would to defend a white, straight, pro-life Christian? Alaska deserves a better AG. Please reject Clarkson. And then I want to point out, and
Ms. Smith, I'm trying to keep to the 2 minute. You're almost up to three, so I'm going to go ahead and conclude there. But thank you very much for your testimony.
I just want to say, do you dismiss the women in this room while you're willing to listen to the attorneys who are all men and have them go first? So I think that's inappropriate, and I want you all to realize that attorneys are not more important than women or anybody else.
Thank you very much. Next here in Juneau, we have Lynn Davis. Ms. Davis.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
I'm Lynn Davis.
Pull that microphone down a little closer.
Sure.
There you go.
Sure. I'm Lynn Davis, and I live across the bridge and have been here for 26 years. I'm a retired state worker, and I've been working for LGBTQ rights since the 70s, and I oppose this nomination because I feel my family has been personally harmed by Mr. Clarkson's discriminatory efforts. As a state worker, I was unable to enroll my wife, who's now my wife of 29 years, under health benefits until I had worked for the state about 12 years. So that's a lot of years for working unequal wages. And from all the testimony around our state in Juneau two summers ago, all the testimony in Anchorage, and now the testimony in Fairbanks, trying to get protection for the LGBTQ community. We know how vulnerable my community is, and I just haven't seen anything from Mr. Clarkson that gives me hope that he would support our efforts to have equal protection. So I would strongly urge you not to confirm him. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I don't see any questions. Next, Allison Curry here in the hearing room.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Allison Curry. I'm the legislative liaison for Planned Parenthood Votes Northwest and a Juneau resident. And I'm also here to voice Planned Parenthood's opposition for the nomination of Kevin Clarkson to Alaska Attorney General. We hear and do not dispute his depth of experience. However, based on our experience, we do not trust that Mr. Clarkson will uphold the state constitution for all Alaskans. I agree with previous comments made by other public testifiers that Alaskans deserve an attorney general who will advocate for the constitutionally protected rights of all people, not elevate one group's rights over all others. Throughout his legal career, Mr. Clarkson has elevated religious freedom rights above other basic human rights and needs, like creating a family with the person you love or controlling one's own body free of discrimination. Mr. Clarkson has consistently shown a disregard for the reproductive and sexual health of Alaskans, as well as a disregard for the state's constitution. And as you heard previously, he has spearheaded unsuccessful lawsuits supporting laws that would have rolled back the right to privacy for Alaskans. And these anti-abortion laws were correctly deemed unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court, including the parental notification law, which was deemed unconstitutional in the summer of 2016. Mr. Clarkson also has an unacceptable record of opposing equal rights for the LGBTQ community. In our view, no one should be denied access to housing, employment, or public accommodations in a community based on who they are or who they love. Mr. Clarkson's track record of opposing reproductive rights and equal protections for LGBTQ individuals demonstrate that he is unfit for this position and cannot be trusted to uphold protections for basic human rights or uphold the state constitution. We also urge the committee to reject this nomination and appreciate your consideration and for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much. Representative Ledoux has a question.
So I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked one of the previous testifiers. Do you think that nobody should be able to represent the positions that Mr. Clarkson represented? Are they akin to, I mean, we've got a system normally that, you know, one side represents one thing and one side represents the other side. Do you think that with respect to either reproductive rights or LGBT rights, that there is no place for anybody to represent the other side?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux. I recognize there's a vast array of beliefs when it comes to reproductive freedom and LGBTQ rights. Nobody has the same belief, and I do respect that other people have beliefs, so I do recognize that there are gonna be people representing the other side. As a Planned Parenthood representative, though, and also a friend to the LGBTQ community, I am always going to be fighting for access to healthcare for all people and access to education, employment, housing, public accommodations, no matter who a person is or who they love.
So can
follow
I
up?
Just follow up? So don't you think maybe it's kind of a dangerous precedent to say, oh, well, we don't want this attorney to be the attorney general because we disagree with him on his positions with respect to LGBT rights or abortion rights. I mean, if he's precluded from being attorney general on the basis that he represented a side that you did not agree with on these issues, couldn't the same argument be used in another administration, another legislature, to preclude somebody who totally agreed with you on those issues? So I'm just saying, don't you think it's maybe kind of a dangerous precedent to set, to say we shouldn't confirm a lawyer who doesn't agree with us? And I know maybe that's sort of rhetorical, but I just want your views on it.
We'll let her answer on the theory that it's sort of rhetorical.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the
and
chair,
you'll be pleased to know that we have all the attorneys in the row behind you. They're all smiling.
Answer that. I think as a member of the public, it's my right to voice our concerns in opposition of any particular candidate. You, the committee, though, and the rest of the legislative body, you're the voting members, so I guess you get to decide or answer your own question. I will say, though, I guess as an example of a couple nominees in the past, though, just last session, that were not confirmed because of their beliefs, there was a former Planned Parenthood employee who was an appointment to the Board for Direct Entry Midwives who was not confirmed because of her former employer, and then Drew Phoenix, who was not appointed to the Human Rights Commission because of his gender identity. So I think there has already been that precedent set. So I just hope that the committee and the rest of your colleagues just take all views into consideration when reviewing all nominees' qualifications for their appointments.
I don't see any other questions, and there's no one else. I don't see anyone else in. Well, I'll ask: is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify before I go to the folks on the phone? Hearing and seeing no one, we'll go back to there's a few people on the phone. First is Stacy Lucasen. Ms. Lucasen, can you hear us?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Waka Winga, JC Lucasen, Aruna, Atachiva, Richard Lucasen, Amanaka, Sandy Rogers. Hello, good afternoon.
Could you either, if you're on a speakerphone, take yourself off the speakerphone or just use the handset and otherwise move back a little bit from the phone because sometimes we have a little bit weird sound here and you seem a little bit hard to understand.
Okay. I'm on a cell phone, but it's handheld, so.
That's better one than when it started, so you're doing better.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for your time and attention. I understand that Mr. Clarkson is likely a good lawyer and is probably a good person. However, I'm still calling to argue that he is an inappropriate choice for Attorney General. To answer Representative Ledoux's question, she's posed to two of the other women from the community, why would we question somebody who is a religious radical? Why would we say it's okay for him to take those positions on cases, but then not support him for Attorney General? Is the Attorney General responsible for serving all Alaskans? The Attorney General has to be more centrist. If we pick somebody radical for the Attorney General, then we're saying we support some Alaskans, in this case specifically white Christian Alaskans, over all others. And that's not appropriate, and that's not a way that the state is able to affirm that these rights are afforded to all citizens of the state instead of just a few. So while we hear the questions from his lawyers that are on your list of people that were invited, does this person uphold the Constitution for everyone? No, I don't believe based on his track record, both on the cases that he's taken and the actions that he's taken outside cases, like standing with Jim Minery in a discriminatory organization, founding a discriminatory organization that advocates against rights for some people and elevates specific rights above others. Those are actions that tell us this is not a person that we should trust to act in a way that is nonpartisan and that looks to treat everyone equally.
Thank you very much. Ms. Lucas and Representative Eastman has a question for you. Go ahead, Representative Eastman.
Thank you very much, through the chair. Ms. Lucas, I just was curious. I know you mentioned religious a couple of times in your testimony here a moment ago. Are you aware that the U.S. Supreme Court has made it clear to us that we are not to implement or administer any type of religious test to an appointee to the position of Attorney General?
I'm not suggesting that you implement a religious test to any individual. I'm suggesting that you look at somebody's record and you look at the rights that they have upheld and the choices that they've made and see whether or not they're able to consistently work in a way that upholds the law and upholds rights for all citizens or is preferential to some citizens. It could be through the lens of religion, as it is in the case with Mr. Clarkson, or it could be through any other class.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions. Next, we've got Dario Nadi. Ms. Lucas, and thank you for testifying. Next, Dario Nadi. Ms. Nadi, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. My name is Dario Nadi, and I had been in Representative Tuff District recently, sold my house. I believe I've moved to Andy Josephson District, and I'm calling you from my job site on the slope. I'm pulling over right now to turn off this vehicle so that I can talk to you a little better. Anyway, I'm a father of father, stepfather, adopted father of 8 children, and grandfather. One of my children is transgender, and because of that experience, I have to oppose Attorney Clarkson's nomination. It seems that when it comes to LGBTQ rights, he has always been on the side of opposing their rights. They are citizens, and they have an equal right to anybody. And the idea that your religious beliefs want to discriminate against another citizen is the reason that you're not supposed to allow the discrimination based on religion. And if he cannot represent both sides, then he cannot be a fair Attorney General. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue, we've got Mike Coons calling from Palmer. Mr. Coons.
Yes, sir. This is Mike Coons from Palmer. I'm the president of the Greater Alaska Chapter of AMAC, and thank you, Representative Ledoux, for your comments. I fully support Mr. Clarkson for Attorney General. Despite the attacks from the socialist left, Planned Parenthood, and LGBTQ advocates, this isn't about emotion. This is about the U.S. and Alaska Constitution, the law as written by the legislature, and most importantly, the rule of law and enforcement of that law. As has been stated or inferred by members of this legislature and the opposition public, this is not about Mr. Clarkson's religious beliefs or his past work as a lawyer. In point of fact, to do so violates Article 6 in the U.S. Constitution, which reads in part, quote, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States, end quote. We need a person of strength who will stand for our state constitution when lawsuits that attempt to impede what the legislature has correctly passed and implemented are filed. We also need a state attorney, AG, that will work with the Alaska U.S. Attorney General in prosecuting federal felonies instead of just at the state level. Case in point, federal firearms laws pertaining to felons possessing and using firearms in commission of a crime. The previous Alaska AG and DAs did not do so. We now have criminals in our prison system They're costing us big bucks and will be released shortly because of SB 91. We need a state AG that, unlike in the past administration, will stand for the state of constitution, state constitution, and not special interests, as in what happened in the case for land access to lakes outside of Valdez. I oppose the prior attorney general. In my opinion, she did not support the law and the constitutions. Thus, my concerns were borne out. I believe that Mr. Clarkson will be that state AG that we Alaskans can be proud of and have faith that he will uphold the rule of law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next in the queue is Lynette Clark calling from Fox. Ms. Clark.
Good afternoon, gentlemen and ladies. I'm grateful to have the opportunity to testify. I'm Lynette Clark. I live in Fox, Alaska, and I am absolutely for the confirmation of the Attorney General appointee. I think he has proven where he stands, how he stands, and what he believes in. He believes in the Constitution of the State of Alaska, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights. As a citizen in this country for almost 45 years, I have found that I have more freedom by those, and for the most part, representing me through the House and the Senate, and I've seen some sorry mistakes for attorney generals in the past. I think that Mr. Clarkson would make a fine attorney general to represent the Constitution that he has been devoted to, both Alaska and the U.S. He is more than qualified. His devotion to the law has shown through cases that he has worked for and through. And we don't need a moderate attorney. We need a knight in shining armor with the condition of this state. And there are two entities that have spoken against his nomination. One is Planned Parenthood, which I absolutely disavow any of their actions. The other is the LGBT, if I get all the letters right, community. What I know is we all have constitutional rights, and we all cannot be discriminated against. And I think that Mr. Clarkson will stand for that and make sure things are right. I also think he will be an absolute excellent advisor to Governor Dunleavy. I would hope that you would not only send it forward with a please vote yes for his confirmation. Thank you for the time. Any questions?
Thank you very much. I see no questions. Next is Krish Eichenlaub calling from Eagle River. Mr. Eichenlaub.
Hi, this is Krish Eichenlaub for the record. I'm calling from Eagle River, Alaska, and I am in absolute 100% support of Kevin Clarkson for the Attorney General confirmation. And the main thing we should be looking at here, folks, is rule of law, justice for all, and he's going to follow the law, to the letter of the law and the Constitution, and I have no doubt in my mind that he is not going to represent any special interest of any sort, good or bad, whatever you guys are for or against. You know, it's obvious that we have, you know, some deep pockets in there trying to persuade you not to put a guy in there that might not be in their best interest. So I'm looking at justice for all, not just for a few. Thank you. Any questions for me?
I see no questions. Thank you very much for taking the time to testify. There is no one else in the room that has signed up to testify. We've called on all the folks that are either in the LIOs around the state or have called in on the phone. So with that, I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any further questions for Mr. Clarkson before we get to comments? Representative Eastman, a question for Mr. Clarkson?
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Clarkson, if you could come back. It's not like oral argument. Sometimes you get called back for more questions. Representative Eastman, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Clarkson, through the chair. Just in listening to the testimony, it came to mind a follow-up question. As head of the Department of Law, you would be in charge of making decisions on whether cases go forward for prosecution. Is that correct?
In some cases, yes. Not in every case. Probably only in the exceptional cases. I mean, there are delegations of authority down through the criminal division, but generally, yes.
And follow up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. And I'm just curious if you have a case that, you know, you're looking at going forward with because you believe that it's a winnable case, and the governor disagrees. Does the governor have a veto on that if there's a conflict between how you would like to go with prosecuting a case and the governor's agenda? How do you sort through that conflict?
Are we still talking about criminal cases or just any case?
Any case. Thank you.
In criminal cases, I wouldn't see the governor playing a direct role. And most of those cases would be decided at the DA level. And if they elevated higher to the director, John Skidmore, or the deputy, Robert Henderson, and some sort of high-profile, controversial sort of issues might actually make it to my desk. But as far as other cases, let's say it's a case that involves Alaska's interests, and the question is, do we pursue it or do we not? Does the governor get to play a role in that? And maybe does he have a superseding role over mine? I think it would be a discussion between the governor and I. If it's an issue that's controversial, I'm going to involve the governor's office to make sure that they're in line. I work for him. He's my boss, or at least he will be if you confirm me. So it's important that
maybe your boss until we make it.
But he, yeah, he has to be involved in those decisions. And I think, yeah, so for example, if it involved, I'm just thinking of an example, in filing a cert petition or not in the U.S. Supreme Court, would the governor have the ability to say yes or no on that? And perhaps override my decision. He would clearly get my advice, but I think in the end, yeah, it would be his policy call if he wanted to pursue those issues or not, I believe.
Thank you.
I don't know if you want to hear anything from me in response to all that testimony or not.
No.
Okay.
That's not required. I would do want to ask actually a fairly specific question about Department of Law, which to some extent is trending more in the budget, but one of the significant sources of revenue to the state has been suits by the Department of Law and the Natural Resources Department, Oil and Gas Division in specifics, against oil companies on tax issues, because the oil companies hire the best lawyers and the best accountants. And I've seen suggestions on their initial budget discussions that they're cutting some positions in natural resources from Department of Law, and I'm wondering, what is your perspective on, can the oil companies be trusted on these tax matters, or do we need to have a strong and aggressive Department of Law to pursue the state's interest for tax recovery?
Well, I think to answer your question, yeah, we do need to have a strong, very talented Department of Law to respond, because those companies, they're going to do what they're supposed to do, which is to look out for their own financial interests. They're not looking out for our financial interests. And I don't mean to suggest there aren't times when we sort of partner together. We do. Because we're pursuing a common goal at times. But when it comes to tax issues, no, I think we need a strong Department of Law to be able to respond. And I believe we have that. We have a lot of talent in our department.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. So at this point, I'm going to give every member of the committee up to 3 minutes to make any final comments if they would like to. It's obviously not required. And I'll actually go, I'll call on folks going around. Representative Eastman, you're first up. Comments? Representative Wool. Yes. Representative Kopp.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Clarkson, thank you for being willing to step up to serve the state of Alaska in this role. I think it's very telling that the people you served the longest with professionally, who all come from a wide variety of political backgrounds, had uniform support of your integrity. I was particularly paid attention to Eric Sender saying you were the least dogmatic, most soft-spoken and thoughtful lawyer he had ever known, and with some of the best ethics of anybody he'd ever practiced with. The three questions posted by Jeff Feldman, who was your longest legal opponent on most issues that have been controversial, when he highlighted his three questions, will the nominee zealously represent all the people of the state of Alaska? He said yes. Does he or she have the requisite ethics and intelligence? He said yes. and will the nominee give sound guidance to the Department of Law? He said yes. That means a lot to me. And I particularly want to commend your approach to that has obviously earned you a very balanced support among the legal community, because I think, as we heard some of the distressed people on both sides of social issues, fear driving a lot of that of what you may or may not do. We don't want to have a legal department that does not recognize people who are not vulnerable. So I believe that you recognize that there are people who are vulnerable, whether it's the LGBTQ community, whether it's people of all communities, including people who have concerns about the unborn and whether they have a voice, which is where I'm at personally. I want an attorney general who recognizes everyone's voice, and I believe that it's been clearly spoken here that you will recognize everybody's voice, you will faithfully uphold the law, and not give deference to emotion or overly zealous position. And so I appreciate you stepping up to serve, and Mr. Chairman, thank you for giving me the liberty to make those remarks.
Representative Shaw, any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Clarksman, I would also like to shadow my fellow representative on your honor and your integrity. Anytime you hear from an adversary that they honor you as much on either side of what you do, I respect that immensely. I went back to Vietnam a number of years ago and actually met with my enemy, and to sit down and have each one of us speak to one another on the value of what we did and why we did it, that represents a lot. And hearing from folks today, and again, shadowing Representative Kopp, the things I heard from Jeff Feldman, where he sat on both sides with you, and the integrity that he mentioned of you, I appreciate very much. Thank you.
Representative Stutes, any comments?
No, thank you.
And just thank you for coming, and thank you for being prepared. And I would note there was a question about one of the people who testified concerned about why the invited folks who were invited to testify got heard before public testimony. That's been the practice in this committee for at least as long as I've been on the committee, both as a member and as chair. And so when you invite people to testify, you get to choose the people that come. But that's all. I have no further comments. Representative Ledoux, do we have a motion?
Yes. The Judiciary Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee and recommends that the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration: Kevin Clarkson, Attorney General / Department of Law. This does not reflect intent by any of the members to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you. Is there any opposition to forwarding his name to the joint session? Hearing and seeing none, I'm going to gavel out, but after we adjourn, please stay put to sign the committee report. With that, we will adjourn. We will meet again on Wednesday at 1 o'clock. We'll be having more confirmation hearings. We adjourn.